Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. Hey, do you remember the one where Jerry and George met Keith?
Hey, should we say something to him? Oh, yeah, I'm sure he loves to hear from fans in the locker room.
Why, he could say hello to me. I wouldn't mind.
He's Keith Hernandez. You're Jerry Seinfeld.
So?
What, are you comparing yourself to Keith Hernandez? The guy's a baseball player, Jerry. Baseball.
I know what he is. I recognized him. You didn't even notice him.
What, are you making some wisecracks in a nightclub? The guy was in game six, two runs down, two outs, facing elimination.
Excuse me. I don't want to disturb you. I'm Keith Hernandez, and I just want to tell you what a big fan I am. I love your comedy.
Uh-huh. And besides his early 90s turn on Seinfeld, Keith Hernandez has been in the public eye for a long time in New York. First, as an all-star Major League Baseball player, where he played for the St. Louis Cardinals in the 70s and 80s, won a World Series title, an MVP award. Then, of course, for the New York Mets in the middle of the 80s and beyond, where he was part of the legendary 1986 Mets World Series championship team, the last time they won the World Series, unfortunately. Since 2000, he's been a broadcaster for the Mets and for the MLB in the postseason sometimes, and now he's written a new book about his life called I'm Keith Hernandez. Keith, such an honor, big fan of you on the field and off the field. Welcome back to WNYC.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm very, very pleased to be here.
And Mets fans especially, do you have a question for Keith Hernandez? Give us a call, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. You've got a great line in the introduction to the book that reads as much like philosophy as it does sports. Quote, baseball is additive rather than disruptive or merely benign. What did you mean by that exactly?
Well, that's a tough one. There's so many changes going on in the game right now. I think more radical changes in the game since the end of the dead ball era, which ushered in Babe Ruth and the home run. With analytics, we've come so far, and a lot of evaluations on players now on analytics. And, you know, I'm kind of an old dinosaur, and I'm starting to come around as I become more I want to learn about it. And there are some things that you can draw from analytics. But still, we can't get away from the human aspect of the game. Cold statistics are what they are. They're cold, and they don't tell what's in the heart, what's in the soul.
And in fact, in the book, you write about how if it was this way when you were coming up in the minors, you don't think that you would have made it and gotten your shot. Can you talk a little bit about why?
It was a very my minor league years. I mean, you come out of high school, you hit 500, you're all everything, and now all of a sudden you go to spring training. There was 700 kids in camp and only eight teams. So a lot of guys getting cut. I was a bonus baby, a very low pick, but I got $30,000, so I didn't have that worry or that anxiety come the final cut day. But I struggled in A ball. I hit 256. I went to Double A and had a very emotional year. And this is all in the book, where I really almost had like an out-of-body experience. It was so hot in Little Rock, and it was such a terrible bus league all over Texas. But Bob Kennedy was our farm director. Bob Kennedy Sr. played center field for the Cleveland Indians in the 60s and 50s. And he saw something in me visually. And he saw that I was struggling. I had struggled. I had a terrible start. I got it up to 300. After I got it up over 300, I took a deep breath, went home, took a hot bath, which I still do love to take hot baths today. And I just went from within 10 days, I was down to 260. Now, he could have sent me down. He could have, I was crashing and burning.
Could have just looked at the numbers.
He called me up. And years later, after I made it, I ran into Bob and I said, Bob, why don't you send me up? And he just says, Keith, if I'd have left you there in Little Rock, you were going to die on the vine. If I'd have sent you down, I would have destroyed you emotionally. He goes, I knew you had something special, so I took a chance, and sent you up to AAA in Tulsa. And sure enough, it turned my career around.
Is there still a place for talent spotting and human judgment on the part of managers today? Mets manager Mickey Callaway got in trouble yesterday, I think, for leaving one pitcher in when the statistical matchup would have called for bringing in the lefty, but maybe he had a gut feeling that the guy on the mound was doing well, and it backfired.
Well, managers today are very much second guess. We get numbers, the statistics before every game, when I prepare for a game. I want to know left-right splits, they're called. How a hitter hits against a left-hander, how he hits against a right-hander, you know, how he hits against a certain pitcher. That, again, is a very sterile. What I've seen from Mickey right now was the call was to take Seawald, the right-hander, out and bring in a left-hander to face the left-hand hitter who wound up hitting a three-run home run. Callaway doesn't like to do that a lot so far, and I kind of like that because I think it's part of why the game has got so long. You have 8-9 pitchers out there in the bullpen, and it takes time to bring them in. And if you know, a lot of managers are afraid to be second-guessed. In this case, it blew up. And I still think that Mickey's getting used to the talent on this team. I can tell you, Davey Johnson, he was one of the first that did analytics. It's a great story. It's in the book.
He was the Mets manager.
Mets manager, yes.
Won the World Series in 86.
Yes. He called me up. We were flying to Houston to play the Astros. And he calls me up to the first class, and he says, I'm going to give you an off day tomorrow. And I said, why? It was May. I don't need an off day in May. And he goes, well, here's your numbers against Nolan Ryan. You're hitting 167 against him. I go, Davey, no. No, do not do that. If you want to give me an off day, you give me an off day against Knepper, who I hit 330 against my career, who was a tough left-hander. It was hard work. Go figure. I said, I don't mind hitting off Ryan. He walks me a lot, and I've hurt him late in games, and I've beaten him. I don't mind facing him. And he said, okay, put me in the lineup. I go out in an eighth inning and hit a three-run home run to beat him in the dome, a bomb. So I came in the dugout and I said, take those analytics, Davey, and put them where the sun don't shine.
And my guest is New York Mets broadcaster and former player Keith Hernandez. His new book is called I'm Keith Hernandez. And let's take a phone call. Ron in Lynbrook, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ron.
Good morning, Keith. I just want to say that when you came to the Mets, they weren't averaging 4,000 fans to stand. By the time you guys were done, they were bursting at the seams. You couldn't get any more people in there. Your defensive plays and your hitting skills weren't matched by any. And I have to say, knowing that when you guys took the field, if you were the bad guys or the good guys, you were going to guarantee a win. So thank you for coming to New York and playing the way you did, Keith.
Well, thank you. And I think the most important word that you mentioned in that was we filled it up. It wasn't one person. It was the team. It was a great bunch of guys, I think, that really symbolized the grittiness and toughness of New York. And that's why I think that everybody took to us. Of course, 108 wins helps, too.
Now, you were on the last Mets championship team, that one, 32 years ago. If this is an answerable question, why don't the Mets win more championships than they do? And I say this as a lifelong Mets fan who grew up just a few miles from Shea Stadium, went all the time as a kid. They're in New York, so they have lots of revenue compared with many other teams. And yet, decade after decade, they're mostly not even in the playoffs. When, you know, the other big money teams, the Yankees, the Dodgers, the Red Sox, keep going back. Is there any kind of reason?
Well, it starts with the organization, and you know, from the you have a scouting system, and that's where you find the players. It does seem like the Mets have a hard time finding hitters as opposed to pitchers, where the Yankees right now seem to have found Judge and Sanchez, and those are good young hitters, and they are willing to make trades. You know, they made trades for the big guy, the Giancarlo Stanton, that's a really good lineup. I can't tell you one way or the other. Mets have always been an organization that's built around pitching.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with Sandy Alderson at the helm right now, he has a certain philosophy. Let's not forget the Mets were in a World Series not too long ago.
That's true.
Everybody just seems to forget
2015.
That.
2015.
Yep.
That was super exciting. You were in a race. You write about this in the book. You were in a race for the batting title with Pete Rose. 1 year. You give us a kind of a game-by-game narration of that for a section of the book. Batting title, for people who don't follow baseball, that's the highest individual batting average in the league out of the hundreds of players in the league. Did that kind of pressure make you a better or worse performer, or neither?
Well, of all people to have chasing you, I mean, it's very coveted to win a batting title. And I remember starting September 1st, Pete Rose was hitting 310, an afterthought. That's 5 months of baseball. You got almost 500 at-bats. It's hard to raise your average. It's hard to lower your average. You really got to get red hot or go in the tank. And I was hitting like 346. Well, he closed within 6 points of me, I believe, was the closest he got to me, maybe seven. He had such a September. He was the September National League Player of the Month. He had a period of 2 weeks where he hit over 500. Over around 50 at-bats, he had 25 hits. And he got as close. I remember I felt it. I mean, I wanted the batting title. I mean, who doesn't? And then what added more to the pressure of it was that what is this tenacious dog on your pant leg type Charlie Hustle, Pete Rose chasing you.
Mm-hmm. Does that make you play better or worse?
I was tense. I got tense when it got close. And he always seemed to get a hit and get hits. And when we played head up, he led off for Philly. So when we played him in St. Louis the first time, he'd get he'd put the pressure on me, get that hit. But my pitchers wound up getting him out in Philly in the very end. And I came, ironically, here to New York where I iced it. I had a first game of a doubleheader. It's in there. I didn't face any of the pitch. I had no idea who they were. They were all AAA call-ups. Had a three-run home run off Roy Lee Jackson. I went 4-for-5, I think. And that Pete took a 1-for-4, and that gave me a 9-point bulge with like 10 days left to play was in the bag. But we went to Philly after that game. And I go to the batting cage. Pete comes up right to me. First, all right, how in the heck did you go 4-for-5 against four those pitchers you never faced before? And I said, Pete, I don't know. But he don't think that Pete didn't want that batting title.
David in Manhattan, you're on WNYC with Keith Hernandez. Hi, David.
Hey, Keith. You know, years ago, we were neighbors back when you lived in Sterling Plaza and you were playing for the Mets. This one night, you had a date with a lovely woman, and you were cooking for her in your apartment, and your stove went on the fritz. You borrowed a toaster oven from me, and you were very gracious. You even autographed the box that it came in. I soon moved out of the building. I never got to ask you, how did the dinner work out?
Oh, gosh. That's a long time ago. I don't remember my oven going on the fritz, but I'm certainly glad that I signed that. I'm sure the dinner was probably secondary that night. Let's just put it that way.
That's a funny story. Thank you very much. My guest is New York Mets broadcaster and former player Keith Hernandez. I want to play you a clip of your colleague in the broadcast booth, Ron Darling, who was on the show back in 2009. It was right after Obama's election. Mm-hmm. So I asked him, lightheartedly, how you and he got along, since I had heard you were more conservative politically than he is. And here's what he said.
We get along fine, but I do not appreciate the Rush Limbaugh sweaters that he wears to the game. But other than that, we get along fine. And in fact, I think it's good to have both of us feeling different about how things should be done.
Ha! Huh. Do you really wear Rush Limbaugh sweaters?
I don't. Ron was being very, he was joking. I definitely do not.
Yeah. But you write in the book about how baseball isn't immune from the larger social and political discussion going on in the country, and that it can make it tricky for you in the broadcast booth. How does that play out?
Well, I've gotten in my share of trouble in the booth, and you learn over time that there are certain places that you can't go. And really, there's no – you're doing a sports broadcast, a live sport broadcast, and there's really no place in a ball game, in a broadcast, to talk about politics, particularly with the way the country is today. You just do the ball game. Sports are supposed to be a release. You know, it's an entertainment. Get to get you away far from the maddened crowd. That's what we try to do.
So you keep it out pretty much.
I've learned my lessons.
Yes.
And because I used to be very knee-jerk, react knee-jerk, and that's what got me in trouble. But over time, you know, I've had good people. I'm a reactor. I'm not a guy that's going to sit and be methodical. I kind of knee-jerk react. But I've had good play-by-play guys that I've worked with that helped me through it. Bill Webb in the truck, the late Bill Webb, that nursed me along. It's a fine line that I have because things percolate quick, and I can be quick when the game is something's happening, but I also can't wander out of off the reservation. You've got to keep it right on point.
Yeah, so you learn that over time.
Yes.
One thing that I'm curious about, not about you, is why baseball players seem so publicly apolitical compared to basketball and football players. You know, the whole NFL kneeling thing, and LeBron James mixes it up with Trump a little, and political awareness goes way back in the NBA. We've had Roman Rowe on this show talking about the 70s in that respect. But I feel like I never hear anything about baseball players. And I'm just curious if I'm missing it, or is there something different about baseball culture?
That... another difficult question. Well, you know, right now we're going to have, I don't know if it's an all-time low, but there's not a lot of African-American baseball players right now out there. And I think the game is sorely missed because they bring an aspect to the game. I mean, anybody that gets to the big leagues is a tremendous athlete. But I miss the speed of the game when I played, when you had those 80 Cardinal teams. And you know, you had Willie Mays was just the greatest player I ever saw. I was fortunate to grow up in San Francisco and be able to watch him play, and just brought a different dynamic to the game. And I think it's missing today. The game to me is slowed down. It's starting to change a little bit. I cannot stand the base at one base at a time when base runner is going to base it to right field and he only goes to second base. I like a close play at home on a double in the gap and the guy is going to score. A lot of guys can't score today. And that's the exciting part of the game, the anticipation of the play. And I think the fans standing up and they see it. They see the runner. They see the ball coming in. They see the catcher getting ready. And that's kind of missing a little bit in today's game.
So
I love the speed.
You came back to the play of baseball and away from the politics there. A lot of players are Latino. I would think that there might be some public solidarity on the immigration issue in times like these, but I just don't see it publicly like I see it in other sports.
Well, maybe they're smarter than the average bear. They're here to make a living and
keep their heads down.
Just do the game. A lot of the Caribbean players and the Latin American players, they're coming from a lot of them from poverty, abject poverty. This is their way out, and a lot of them don't have a lot of confidence in their English, and there's the things that they have to work on in the minor leagues. I played in the minor leagues; it was the same way. My roommate was Hector Cruz. He was from Puerto Rico, and I basically helped him learn to speak English. We roomed together for 3 years. And when you're in a foreign country, you're afraid to speak because you're afraid to speak their language. You're afraid to sound stupid. You know how that goes. So that might be it.
In fact, to that point, I've heard people say that the military and professional sports are maybe the most successfully integrated institutions in the U.S. because they're pure merit, and biases can't come into play as easily. They can come into play anywhere, but as easily as they do in other kinds of institutions.
Well, our country was based on meritocracy, and I think that sports, you're going to put the best team out there. Now, there are cases where a certain coach can put a label on you in the minor leagues, doesn't like you for whatever reason. It can be a racial thing, which I didn't see that much, or it can be purely attitude. It didn't like your attitude, and you get that label on your back, and you're going to have a hard time getting it off.
Tiffany in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC with Keith Hernandez. Hi, Tiffany.
Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted the opportunity to say about 7 years ago, I moved in with my boyfriend, Jose, and he is the biggest Mets fan, and I didn't care for baseball at all. And then through watching the games and Keith, your commentary and the banter that you guys have, I've come to completely love it and appreciate every time you've got the baseball game on. So I just wanted to say thank you for that.
Well, that's very kind of you, and that makes me feel good because that's our job. Our job is to bring in viewers, and also the hardest games are the 10-0 games in the third innings when the Mets are losing, and we got to hold our audience.
You do it well. You do it very, very well. I see other, you know, I watch other games with other commentators, and I'm like, why is this so boring? And then I realize that you guys aren't there.
Well, I can't make a comment on that, but I don't watch much of the other broadcasts, to be honest with you.
Tiffany, thank you very much, and I will second that emotion that you guys are so warm. You make it personal. It's like listening to a good talk show when the games get slow, and you and Ron and Gary obviously really like each other, or you're putting on a very good front, and you're just having really good conversation.
Well, Gary is the conductor. I call him our Leonard Bernstein. He's the one. People want to hear what we have, Ronnie and I have to say. And I think one of the beauties of the broadcast is that you have Ronnie with pitching expertise, and you have me on the hitting side. And Ronnie played in the field, too, so he can comment on that. But I can't bring up things about pitching, the details, intricacies of pitching like Ronnie can. I had a different perspective. My point of view was, how am I going to attack this pitcher? How am I going to beat him? And then Ronnie's is the exact opposite, how he's going to attack me, the hitter, with his pitching repertoire. So I think it's a good blend. Gary is very intelligent, as you well know, mm-hmm. and he asks us very intellectual and pointed questions. He keeps us on our toes, and he shines in those 10-0 games early. He's a professional. This is what he wanted to do. Ron and I, we were professional baseball players. We weren't trained in broadcasting. We learned on the job, and we fortunately had good people to help us along the way. But basically, it's the play-by-play guy that brings in the expertise, and that's what the people want to hear.
And I think, to my eye anyway, baseball broadcasts are much more analytical and less simply action-oriented than they were when I was a kid. I don't know if Tim McCarver, the old Mets announcer, had a lot to do with it. He wrote that great book, Baseball for Brain Surgeons, and he had a very analytical take on the game and did the Mets games for so many years. But what you were just describing about the deep dive that you can take into the batting because you've done it, that Ron can take into the pitching because he's done it. The Yankees actually have some similar matchups of former player analysts. And you really, and I personally love it, give the viewer a real analytical sense of what's going on in the player's head, what's going on in the manager's head, the skill sets involved. And I don't know, it just seems to me really much more analytical than decades ago.
Well, McCarver would be the one. He was the one that even my father, who played minor league ball, when I the first year in 84, and I got him a dish to put up in the house so he can watch the games, he called me around a month in and said, this guy McCarver, he's unbelievable. I mean, Tim, he's brilliant. So Tim did. He was the one that cracked through the ceiling of a ball player who really changed everything. He deserves to be in the Hall of Fame where he is in the broadcasting area. No doubt about it.
And we have to leave it there with Keith Hernandez, former Met, former Cardinal, former batting champion, MVP, now one of the former Mets you hear from the broadcast booth during Mets games, as we were just describing. And if you want to meet Keith, he will be at the Barnes & Noble in Midtown Manhattan. That's at 555 Fifth Avenue at 46th Street for a lunchtime signing. Oh, you're going right from here. That's at 12:30. Oh, no, I'm sorry. That's tomorrow.
Right.
Tomorrow. Forgive me. So, folks, let me say that again so I don't confuse you. The Barnes & Noble at 5th and 46th tomorrow at 12:30 for a Keith Hernandez signing. And there's a link with more information to other events on our website, WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. His new memoir is called I'm Keith Hernandez. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.